Good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to see so many people here today for our informational meeting. I'm going to call the January the 17th, 2005 Senate Committee on Transportation to order. And our first order of business is to call up some people to inform us about things that we need to know and get up to speed and on a basis. But before I do that, I want to tell you that I have chosen as my emphasis, so that all of you know and kind of can understand as time goes along where I intend to lead us. And that is that I want to be, I want to emphasize a competitive economic agenda. And that as it pertains to a healthy infrastructure with rail, marine, and airports. So you're going to be seeing a lot of emphasis on that as we gather information as we go along. And I'm looking forward to being your chair. And I have served on transportation in the first session that I was in the House of Representatives. I also served during the interim. I was an eight-year mayor, worked with the Transportation Department on a lot of issues. So I come to the chair with great enthusiasm about transportation and great optimism about what we can do in Oregon to improve our transportation system. So with that, I'm going to call up two people, Chris Warner from the governor's office and Bruce Warner from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Chair Verger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Warner. I am the governor's transportation policy advisor and also his legislative director. And first off, I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. Your words were very well spoken in terms of the governor's agenda with economic development and transportation. He basically sees it as a system that can help enhance our transportation system, and I very much appreciate those words because that's great leadership for us in the committee. As you know, getting the economy moving has been the hallmark of this administration, to try to focus on jobs and the medical and the many transportation issues before us. Certainly, the governor believes that a viable and diverse transportation system is critical to the state's economy. Oregon's initiated three major transportation systems over the past few years with the OTIA 1, 2, and 3 projects, where we've invested nearly $3 billion, $2.96 billion, to improve our roads and bridges. And these funds have also included monies for the cities and counties because the governor does see this as a system and wants to work with all the parties, and we're very anxious to work with everyone to make sure that these transportation needs are met. He also recognizes that OTIA is also about putting people to work, and not only construction jobs, but also having an efficient transportation system for our businesses as we move forward into the next century. Again, I would like to compliment many members, including Chair Verger and everyone on this panel, for the work they've done in the past. The new senator hasn't been here, but you're sitting very much with the leaders in the transportation kind of caucus, if you will, for the legislature. They've done a lot of work in terms of putting people and putting the entire transportation system at the forefront of the legislative process, and I thank you for your work you've done there. And in recognizing these critical investments, it's also important to look at all of the transportation pieces of the system, from our rail, our marine, our air, our transit system, to make sure that the entire system as a whole is strong, diverse, and efficient. Senate Bill 71, which is what we've introduced with the cooperation of the department, we'll talk about the specifics, Director Warner will, but I'd like to give you some kind of brief thoughts on where the governor is on transportation and where he feels that this investment makes good sense now for Oregon's economy. As you know, we are extremely limited on the use of highway funds for our transportation system. They are constitutionally dedicated. And with that limitation, we think it's very necessary to look at other forms of investment in order to make sure our transportation system is whole. By using $100 million in lottery-backed bonds to invest in Connect Oregon, we're really hoping that we can have a true economic spark for our air, rail, transit, and marine infrastructure. It will help the health of the entire transportation system, which includes the roads and bridges. By not being overly dependent on one form of transportation, we can keep all of these sectors of the economy connected to distribution points, take advantage of the most cost-effective parts of the transportation system, and also have a variety of choices, which will maintain the natural competitive transportation system. Certainly, I'd like to just quickly give you a couple of the things that we see why this would really jumpstart the economy. Certainly, the construction jobs, the transportation savings, and also the business recruitment piece, we think are critical elements in terms of keeping the economy rolling. These investments, not only the construction jobs, but it will help retain the jobs by creating a better transportation system for Oregon shippers and businesses. It will help us with our global competitiveness, and will also help increase the delivery times and ensuring that our highway system investments are not choked off by the investments, by the inadequate investments of other parts of the system. One of the things that the governor recognizes is that the West Coast economy is growing, and so has the amount of freight, the population for the system, and so we really do need to make sure that we make those kind of early investments. In fact, I think there was a forecast that said it would double between 2000 and 2020 in terms of the amount of freight. So we need to get on the front end of this in terms of what we need to do. Certainly, we think that the transportation system investments need to happen now. And we think that not only will they help in the future, but they'll help the existing companies and the industries we have, whether it's forest products, the agricultural, the high-tech, sports apparel. Those are the kind of investments that I think, those are the kind of companies that these investments will help. Investment now will also help us to leverage additional funds through state matching funds that will attract both public and private dollars for our rail, marine, and aviation investments, but also the associated development of the different businesses will help not only the economy by creating jobs, but also help the tax base, which is extraordinarily important. We also want to work with our federal partners and the federal delegation in making sure that these any kind of rail investments they're making, we can also help complement that, because we have heard some things back east that they're looking at maybe making some investments in rail. We also think that by investing in these other transportation systems, that it will reduce shipping costs, which will also help business. But it will also help with the extraordinary work we've done on industrial lands. We've made a lot of investment, whether they be on certifying sites, getting these project-ready sites. One of the things that businesses ask when they come forward, they ask about the highway system and that part of the transportation system, but also a lot of businesses ask about your rail, about your airports, ask about all those other modes of transportation. So we think it's integral as we move forward with an industrial land policy that we also make these strategic investments in transportation. And investment now can really also help maximize our region's natural transportation advantages. Even though we are on the left coast, we do have two major interstates in Oregon. We have two Class 1 railways. We have international ports. We have an international airport. So we do have many other kinds of transportation infrastructures that we want to make sure that we enhance those investments. And also, we want to make sure that we also are in place of in case we need to increase the market reach. I think you saw in the paper a few months ago the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach about how all the ships are stacking outside of there. And we want to work with our ports to make sure that if those places get too congested, we have kind of an alternative if they are looking for other places to go. We want to make sure that we're poised and ready to be able to take those. And also, the governor sees investment now in Connect Oregon will also help to ensure that the investments we've currently made in our roads and bridges aren't wasted because we aren't able to grow our way out of it in terms of highway investment. So we think that we can't overburden the current highway system. I think we've heard a lot about congestion and how that's increasing. If we are able to take a little bit of that off the roads, I think it will make a better transportation infrastructure for all modes of transportation and all of the users, whether it be trucking or rail or transit. I think it's important that we do that. And I think also kind of the multiplier effect. Once you make these investments by these state dollars, we'll also have federal dollars and private dollars come in. So we are looking for that multiplier effect that I think can be very important as we not only recruit businesses but make sure businesses are here to stay. We want to work with our partners to make sure that they are able to do that. So, for example, I think one thing is FAA monies and the area aviation department. The match on that is an incredible match, like 19 to 1 in many cases. So, if we have a little bit of state money, we should be able to leverage quite a bit of other funds. So, again, that's kind of a brief overview of kind of where the governor's coming from and his thoughts on moving forward with this kind of an investment package for the state. And he recognizes that these are very difficult budget times, but he thinks that by using the state's bonding capacity for these strategic investments that they will eventually pay off. I think he's been very clear in terms of not using debt for capital operating expenses, but for using it for some kind of strategic investment like any kind of a business or organization would be. If you're going to use the debt, use it in a way that's actually going to create wealth as we go down in the future. So I'd like to turn over to Director Warner, I think, who will talk about any kind of the specifics about the bill, and then we're here to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Chris. Mr. Warner.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I also want to thank you, Madam Chair, for your comments in terms of helping Oregon maintain a competitive economic advantage that it has and to make sure that we build on that in the future. I think my purpose here is obviously the interest of you and others is how will the proposal actually work and how will projects be selected to be funded by this program. And what I would like to do is just very quickly outline some of the things that are in Senate Bill 71 that as you read it, you'll understand how we envision this moving forward. As Chris indicated, Connect Oregon is a $100 million lottery-backed bond program, and it's to be used for these other modes of transportation because highway revenues cannot be spent on those other modes. And I wanted to make it clear that, you know, what we are looking at right now, we believe it looks like the interest rates are still going to be favorable, and that the types of improvements, these capital improvements that we're talking about to be funded by these lottery-backed bonds are improvements that would last well beyond the life of the loan, in other words, the bonds. And so these are things that we believe will be capital investments, again, not short-term operational type things. Make it very clear we're talking about projects here. The other thing that I wanted to note in here is that the Oregon Transportation Commission will oversee the selection of the projects, but would not necessarily do the administration or moving the actual projects forward. We're going to be working closely with the Oregon Department of Aviation and the Economic and Community Development Department in selecting projects that would be funded by this measure. I tried to, in my written testimony, just again outline for you some of the important reasons why, for example, investments in air through airports are very, very important to Oregon. I think you all know that air transportation connects rural populations with services and commerce in our larger cities, and then our larger cities use that air traffic to travel to compete and connect to the overseas and other portions of the nation. Overnight mail, air cargo, air ambulance, air commuter trips, and aviation-related businesses all rely on the airports and the investments and rely on that networks of infrastructure and airports throughout the state of Oregon. So there's a number of things that we can do to make our airports more efficient and effective in those areas. In terms of marine, I think Chris mentioned to you the amount of freight traveling through and out of Oregon is expected to over double in the next 20 years. I can't stress to you what that means in terms of the load on all of the modes. We need to make sure that marine is able to carry those goods, and there's just a number, as you know, of businesses that rely heavily heavily on marine services to get their goods to market and to ship out raw products from Oregon, raw materials from Oregon to other areas of the world. As I noted in my testimony, there's more than 1,000 businesses in Oregon and Washington that do use marine facilities, and they rely on that heavily. In terms of public transportation investments, often we don't think about public transportation's impact on the movement of goods and services throughout the state, but public transportation does play an important part, especially in some of the large urban areas, to move large numbers of people from one part of the area to another and from one part of the state to the other, which helps in all sorts of ways in terms of reducing congestion, reducing air pollution. And the main thing we'd like to do in some of these major corridors, like the I-5 corridor, is eliminate, if we can, as much of the short trips that are occurring on our interstate freeways to, again, promote them to be used for the movement of goods and services. So if we can get those commuter traffic off of the highways, we can again, have additional capacity for the movement of freight. And then finally, rail. I think Chris talked a little bit about the railroads that here. We have two large Class 1 railroads in terms of the Union Pacific Railroad and the Burlington Northern. But in Oregon, we also have 20 short line railroads. And Chair, you're familiar with the one in your particular area. They're very, very critical to the economy and mainly in the areas that rely upon natural resource extraction and movement of those types of materials to market. So if you look at this bill, I want to make it clear that the intent is that priority for projects would be given to those projects which facilitate the transfer of people or freight between or among the various modes of transportation that I just described, or improve mobility or travel conditions on two or more modes simultaneously. The intent is connecting the modes together and making them work together as a system. The proposed law also indicates that no more than 25% of the total money could be spent on one project. So in other words, essentially the intent is to make sure that those monies are equitably distributed as much as possible around to deal with the needs around the state, and you can't have one project that would take all of those monies. The other thing that this bill does is it says that no more than 80% of the project costs could be funded by these lottery-backed bond revenues, which means essentially we're trying to encourage and incent another 20% of fundings from either other public or private sources to complete the projects. And then to make sure that all of the modes get some portion of the revenues, it also states that 10% of the money available will be allocated to each of the four modes. So 40% is already outlined for those particular modes, but 60% is clearly wide open that could be used for any of those modes. I did note in my testimony that the Commission will utilize our existing advisory committees as well as maybe create a couple new ones involving public transit and rail, so we have both the passenger rail and the freight rail folks in the room talking about the importance and investments that we need. And we will work very closely with Economic Development and with the Aviation Department to make sure that we have projects that really accomplish the intent of the legislation. So we're going to ask those agencies and interest groups to identify projects for us, and as they consider those projects, we're going to ask that they do a few things which are outlined in Senate Bill 71, which says we want them to look at whether these proposed transportation projects result in an economic benefit to the state of Oregon. Two, whether the proposed transportation project requires an ongoing commitment of resources for the state. So we want to know if we're going to have some sort of continuing liability with the any project that's being proposed. And we also want to know how much of the projected cost of any proposed project can be borne by the applicants or sponsors or others involving this project. So again, we leverage those monies as much as possible around the state of Oregon. And we do have an ability to essentially say if people, because obviously the intent is that matching would be for a project would be a priority setting issue. We want to know if there's a problem with somebody coming up above that 20%. So if there's an economic distress in some area, we want to have that identified so we can take that into consideration when we make project decisions. And then finally, one which is not in the proposal that you have before you is I believe the governor has made it very clear that he'd like to see this money get out to projects as quickly as possible and jobs being created. So we're going to ask folks to make sure that they look at the projects and make sure that they're ready for implementation so we can see an economic benefit as quickly as possible in these projects. So in terms of how we would vet these projects and the process we'd use, clearly the law is set up so that any person or public body may propose a project. We're going to rely on the various advisory groups and departments to come up with projects, but the intent would be to review those projects with those advisory groups. We would use our regional transportation advisory groups, which we call area commissions on transportation. We'd use a freight advisory committee as well as the other groups that are out there that of interest to essentially review and provide comment to us on the projects. But if everything went right, we believe we could see project criteria, solicitation of projects, review of projects done so that in early 2006 you could make project decisions and have projects that would be ready to go in 2006. So in summary, Connect Oregon, I believe, if passed as put together, would improve transportation modes, as you outline, Madam Chair, give Oregon businesses an opportunity to compete more effectively in national and international markets, provide efficient service to Oregon's market for jobs and the economy. I think it will leverage additional resources. I specifically look at the railroads, where we will have opportunities for public-private partnerships, and it will help diversify our transportation infrastructure because we can't rely on the one mode alone to solve our needs in the future. In fact, when I talk with businesses, most of them have at least one or two connections from their products when it gets to market. They need the connections of those other modes, hence Connect Oregon, and hence why we think this is a good idea and would like to talk with you some more. So that would conclude my testimony, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, both of you. I have a couple of questions, and then I'm going to open it up to other members of the committee. But I just want you to clarify a couple of things for me, Mr. Director, and that is, what are the total amount of bonds? And you talked about no project being able to have more than a certain amount of money, but what would the total project be? What would the total number of bonds that you're looking at?
The total number of bonds that we were looking at was $100 million.
Okay, so you're looking at the full package.
That's correct.
Senate Bill 71. The other thing is, would it depend in any way on the expansion of lottery? In other words, does it, if we don't expand lottery at all, if we don't add line games, would that change anything in this scenario?
I can't. Madam Chair, members of the committee, at this point, no. I do not believe that it is dependent on any kind of expansion in terms of any kind of line games. That's my understanding. But I have a meeting with that later in the week because we're trying to get our arms around that.
And one final clarification, and that is, when people may suggest projects, is the final word through the Oregon Transportation Commission? Are they the final ones that make the choices on the project?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
That is correct. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to open it now to other members of the committee. Yes, my vice chair.
Madam Chair, Mr. Warner, approximately what would be the annualized cost of repaying this $100 million loan or bonding?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, the amount obviously would be dependent upon the term and the interest rates that you have at any time. But if you look at what we've been doing recently in terms of bond sales, and the bond sales have been around, I believe, about a 5% interest rate, you can take a look at that. And if you had a 20-year bond, for example, you can look at a multiplier effect of about 12 to 1. So somewhere between $8 and $9 million annually to support a bond in today's interest rate.
Over 20 years.
But again, you could do bonds at a less duration, longer duration, obviously that affects. So we rely on the state treasurer to figure out what the best interest rates are and the best way to structure the bonds with bond counsel also to get the biggest bang for the buck and minimize the expense in the long term.
Thank you. A follow-up question. Then if this is going to be $8 or $9 million a year from the lottery income, and you're not going to expand the lottery sales, do you have some idea where this is, you know, what other programs would be reduced by that $9 million?
Madam Chair, Senator, my response is, first off, I think we ought to get the folks that understand the bond revenues and where the monies are going to come in and give you a little more detail on that. But again, we were very carefully, as Chris pointed out, looking at the projections of the bond revenues, and in terms of the priorities, I think you will look at the proposal that the governor has laid out in his recommended budget does include all the other programs. I don't believe there's been reductions in major programs, but obviously in all of those areas where the lottery dollars have gone, there have been adjustments up and down based on the priorities and where the governor believes those money should be going. So I think we probably need to come back with some additional information that would outline exactly for you where all the monies are going in the lottery fund, as well as what I think you're asking is where they were in the past in this current biennium we're in right now, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
All right. Senator Metzger is recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the entire committee is kind of on the same wavelength here. Excellent question, Senator Woodson. On that same line, since the governor's budget is predicated on the assumption of greater lottery increases, number one, and that's part of the predication of the budget. But number two, Mr. Chris Warner, is the $8 to $9 million of debt service that Director Warner has articulated necessary to support the bonds. Is that $8 and $9 million, is that itemized in the current budget? Is that part of the budget, those dollars? Are they in there?
Chair Berger, Senator Metzger, they are.
Okay.
It is part of the governor's recommended budget. In terms of the lottery bond capacity, the monies that the state would be expending, $100 million of that would go to Connect Oregon.
Yes. Okay, so those dollars are itemized for Connect Oregon.
Correct.
In budget. The second question on that, and this would be for Director Warner, would be, I appreciate the concern over, as we talked about these issues in the interim, the need to look at connecting all our various transportation infrastructure. And because of that, we also have the political need to make sure that someone gets their 10% and someone gets their 10%. But it's also, if we're truly going to connect Oregon, we got to make sure that these funding investments connect. Because it doesn't do any good to spend $10 million on rail here for something that and $10 million on a port here and somewhere else, and then the overall scheme of things do not help anything in particular unless those investments produce an end result. Mm-hmm. So what is your feeling in terms of, as we move forward on this, is to ensure that the investments that are made have a connectivity among themselves that help produce a good result for, because we're obviously not going to be able to do every project and link to everything.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, if I could answer that question. That's exactly, I think, what we're trying to get at here, is that we're trying to give priority to those projects that connect more than one mode of transportation, first off. But I think you're getting right down to how do you make the decision on the best project that leverages the most and is of the most strategic importance for the state of Oregon. That's the job we're going to be working with the various other departments, along with the stakeholder groups, to, first off, develop criteria that help us get to the answers you have. But when we get done, we feel certain that the projects we're selecting are the best ones that connect the modes and are the most important projects, because we know we're not going to be able to address all of the needs out there. If I could, I just wanted to also note that I gave you a handout that showed the $8 million that was given to us by the legislature to allocate the short line railroads and rail spurs. This is an example of investments that were made around the state of Oregon. Not large investments, but they did create good jobs, and I believe they did create strategic advantages for those areas and for our ability to compete in the market. So we need to do this same similar kind of process with this kind of money to make sure we're getting exactly where you want to go.
I would like to follow up on that, because a rail spur to the North Spit, for instance, has enabled a company to literally move to the North Spit, and which is very advantageous to them. And even though the cost of that spur was not that great, the impact of what that will mean to the economy will be far greater than the cost. So, others. Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. Since you brought up this map that's right here in front of me. This was last session. The source of these $8 million funds was, just refresh all of our memories again.
This was lottery-backed bonds that was, granted by the legislature for this particular purpose. It was for rail improvements and specifically for short lines and for rail spurs.
And to follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, follow up.
Was this direct grants, or was this that? It seems like we had a revolving loan program. Is that, am I confusing two things?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, yes, these were grants, but many of them, the grants, again, did leverage additional monies from both the large railroads, but in this case, mostly the short line railroads.
And then one additional question. My understanding is that the Oregon Transportation Infrastructure Fund or infrastructure account, is that not the state's SIB, State Infrastructure Bank, basically? It's just named, not a bank, it's a fund. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, that's correct.
So this proposal would be birthed or be housed within the state's infrastructure bank. With the caveat that this is $100 million and this program would go to these as it's outlined in this bill, but it's within the state's SIB.
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, I believe that is correct.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Others? Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on some of the other questions that were asked, I guess I'd like some clarification as to what type of rail projects. My concern from what I've heard from the previous sessions I've served, we're not able to move freight and people on the passengers corridor in the valley because of not having enough sidetrack and improved tracks to actually do it efficiently and effectively. Is it contemplated within this plan for Connect Oregon that some of those areas would in fact be addressed? First question.
Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, what I would tell you is those are some of the kinds of projects I would most definitely see that would be forwarded to us for consideration. And those are also exactly the kind of projects that I would also envision the railroad stepping up and paying a large share of those particular projects because they benefit not only passenger but mainly freight. Some of the improvements are fairly modest in terms of their dollar amounts, and some of them are very expensive, and so I think that's where some of the limitations will come into play in terms of the sizes and the scope of the projects you could pick off with this type of account. But that is exactly the kind of projects we're looking at, as well as again facilities where you could connect the trucks to the rail or trucks to the maritime or those kind of transfer facilities. So it's wide open. The way this is written, it can do that or facilities or other types of improvements that would facilitate movement of goods and services as well as people on the rail system.
I may follow up.
Follow up.
Regarding the summary that we have for SB 71, my reading of this is basically setting up the account. And what I'm hearing today is SB 71 does not actually, let's say, expend that money that would be going into that account, that there would be through some type of deliberate process through different committees or groups that would be making decisions in the future as to which projects were going to be funded.
Madam Chair, Senator, as I was trying to say, the way the legislation is written, you're correct. You would essentially set the funding and put it into this account. The Transportation Commission, in consultation with all of the advisor groups, the departments of aviation and economic development, would essentially make the project decisions very similar to the Oregon Transportation Investment Program that has gone on for the last 3 or 4 years.
I have one follow-up.
No. Sure, absolutely.
And regarding the definition in the back on the summary, it talks about what is the current definition of Oregon projects, and it gives a pretty broad definition as to what terms are included. And they have different areas, including highway, transit, rail, aviation, capital infrastructure, bicycle and pedestrian. Is there any breakout at this point as to how much would go into any of those subcomponents?
Madam Chair, Senator, no.
Thank you.
Okay. Other than the 10% per category minimum that would be outlined in the bill. If I was clear there.
All right. If I could follow up based on that.
Sure.
So 10%, that means, such as just looking at bicycle and pedestrian paths, 10% of the amount. This is on the summary.
for the measure SB 71 that was delivered to us this afternoon. It has a background that says the current definition, and in one part it says breaking out the different types of transit projects, and one of them is bicycle and pedestrian paths. And I'm just trying to get on the table now, what, if anything, is being dedicated to any given area, or is it pretty much up for grabs based on the committee decisions when they go through that process?
Madam Chair, Senator, first off, in terms of the breakdown the level you're talking about, there's no decisions or no allocations of funds. But if you look at the bill, it says 10% should go to aviation, 10% to marine, 10% to public transit, which includes a number of things you're describing, and 10% to rail.
Thank you.
Director Warner, it says that the bill will sunset on January the 2nd, 2008. And you talked about 2006 being able to put projects out. Do you anticipate that those projects would be finished by the sunset date?
Madam Chair, what we would like to hope is, of course, the majority of projects would be done by 2008, because that would be the intent of this, to jumpstart the economy and get the projects done. The question is, what do you need? What would the sunsetting mean to projects which are still in construction, or underway? If you look at the way the bill is structured, and we'll verify this because I think that's a very good question. If the bonds have been sold, the project has been selected, and we've essentially entered into a grant agreement with a particular entity to build the project and have transmitted the money to them, we would believe we're done and they could continue building a project beyond that date. But I think one of the criteria we'd be looking at in terms of projects would be to get projects that can be done quickly, and I think that's the reason you see the sunset there, is to encourage folks to essentially get projects that are ready to construct and can be moved forward quickly and get the money into the economy.
And what about a project that might include some small highway project along with it? Would the funding from that come from the bonding, or would that might come from the highway fund?
Madam Chair, another excellent question. If you look at the bill specifically says you cannot use any of these funds to build highway projects, those that are covered by revenues that could become part of the Highway Trust Fund. So what that would mean is, if there's a project, for example, let's say a reload facility that connected rail and trucks, as an example, and you needed to build a road to get to that facility, then we would have to work with our local government partners. Maybe we'd look at our immediate opportunity fund, especially if there's jobs that are being created, to essentially figure out a way to use some highway dollars to leverage that as part of the overall project.
Okay. All right. Other questions? Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's great. I've got the statute in front of me, so this is real helpful. And I'm looking back, and it lists here the implementing language for this House Bill 3446. Have all these projects, all eight $8 million, is out the door? Projects are under construction, or construction is complete? Can you talk a little bit? Because this, I guess, is our closest related example of how something like this might work. Could you tell us how these projects particularly were identified and selected in that process?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, first off, I could not give you the status of every one of the projects. Kelly Taylor, my rail administrator, is in the audience, maybe could, or we could give you a status report on each one of these. But I think the process that we utilize to select these projects is probably a bit more abbreviated process, but very similar to what I just described to you. Essentially, we went to all of the various railroads and interest groups and said, what projects are there that are important to you from the rail standpoint? For example, we asked the Port of Coos Bay if they had a project, which we knew they did, and they made application of those projects. We utilized my staff and other advisory groups to vet these projects, but then essentially came to our Transportation Commission with a list of projects that we felt best met the intent of the legislation, leveraged the most money, and created the most jobs and economic opportunity for the state. And this was I believe there was like 4-1, in terms of the requests for this types of money than what we actually had available. But essentially what I'd say to you is the process we utilized for selection of these was a small mini version of what I described for you on this bill. Okay, she's nodding her head.
Kelly, would you like to add anything to that? We'd be happy for you to come up and and add something, just if for no other reason, just to show us your new hat? I mean, after all. Kelly was with the Department of Motor Vehicles, and she was a wonderful resource, and now she's changed hats with us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Tater, Department of Transportation, and I hope to serve you just as well at the Rail Division.
Thank you.
I want to say that Director Warner was exactly telling you how it was. We did go out and talk to communities, et cetera. As far as the question that Senator Starr had as to whether or not all these contracts have been let and what's going on, they are on different phases because some companies were really ready to go, and so we got those contracts out as fast as we could. Some projects are being staged, not quite started yet, but we are close to having a contract for each one of these, and in some cases they are moving dirt and building spurs.
Right. Other questions? Well, I want to thank all of you for being here today. And Kelly, I know you'll do a great job with rail, just as you did in the Department of Motor Vehicle.
Thank you.
All right. Next on our agenda, we have a couple of people that are going to come up. Mr. Pat Egan.
All right. That's the technology here.
Here's my agenda. And we have, are all of you going to come up at one time?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
That's great.
We have Pat Egan from the Port of Portland and Don Mann from the Port of Newport and Ken Armstrong.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Ken
with us? Okay. good afternoon, Madam Chair. Pat Egan, State Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland, for the record, and very happy to be here on the first day of your committee, and thank you for the opportunity. We're going to test a little technology here. I've got for you, and I think the audience, a copy of a, there we go, PowerPoint presentation that I put together partly in response to the question you put to me last week on what is the Port of Portland doing, among other things, to help other ports in the state of Oregon. And I thought it would be good and appropriate to give you a little bit of background on the port itself so we can talk about the port cooperation projects that we've done with Don and through Ken Armstrong's group, the Oregon Ports Group. Just before I jump into it, though, I would like to say it's just a real pleasure to be here on the same day that you're taking up Connect Oregon, which is certainly something that we support wholeheartedly. Ports themselves really are, if nothing else, transportation infrastructure. The people obviously certainly matter. The economic relation that we have to the community matters. But what we do is about transportation infrastructure. And it's in many cases transportation infrastructure. Certainly we have a great interest in the highway side, in trucks and in cars, and how people move around. But the infrastructure that we deal with is oftentimes these other non-highway modes, rail, aviation, marine, and in some cases even transit with the airport, for example. So we certainly have an interest in the heart and soul of Connect Oregon, and certainly are very pleased that you're taking that up today. One other thing on Connect Oregon before I jump into it. A lot of your questions were about really economic development, I think, and the criteria in the legislation, as I read it anyway, I think does a pretty good job of focusing in on economic development and how that infrastructure matters to the economy. And Senator Przanski, you had a question about bike and pedestrian, and not to talk about that one particularly, but if you look at the criteria that the Transportation Commission would be looking at least as I look at it, they're looking at return on investment, job creation, that's right there in the bill. And so those are the kinds of things I think they'd evaluate in picking those projects. At least that's my view. Before I jump into this, I do want to allow Don and Ken an opportunity to introduce themselves.
Okay. Madam Chair, the members of the committee, I'm Don Mann. I'm the General Manager of the Port of Newport. And thank you for allowing us to be here today.
Madam Chair, members, Ken Armstrong representing the Oregon Ports Group.
Okay, and stop me, of course, if you have any questions along the way. Port of Portland itself was created by the legislature in 1891 to create a channel, actually, between Portland and the Pacific Ocean. That was its first statutory charge. We've got a whole chapter now, Chapter 778, that's got Park parts and pieces to it, but our physical infrastructure now includes four marine terminals, and I'll talk about each one of those in a minute, four airports, and seven business parks, so a number of industrial acres as well. This is just a map that gives you a sense of where our properties sit at the confluence of the Columbia and Willamette Rivers. You've got the terminals you can see, starting with four up to six. Terminal six is our international container facility. That's the one we've had the most fun with here in the last year. With the and again, I'm happy to answer any questions you'd have about that. But that's where our containers come into and go out of, and a large amount of our auto businesses as well. And you can see Portland International Airport there too. The port has a substantial economic impact. We know this intuitively, but we've also got a lot of studies that we've paid people for to look at this issue for us. Just directly in providing access to markets internationally, we provide that service for over 1,000 area businesses, roughly 600 plus in the Portland area. We also create and influence a number of jobs just in the Portland metropolitan service area, about half on the aviation side, about half on the marine side of the 150,000 plus that you see here. Through that activity, create over $4.5 billion in business revenue and creating a number of jobs, paying income, paying salaries, and paying into state and local tax coffers as well. Chris Warner mentioned a lot of this earlier. We have and benefit from a great deal of geographic advantages and some infrastructure advantages that have been built up over time. Two of the six national Class 1 railroads serve the Port of Portland and the state of Oregon and come together actually on our properties. We have the channel and the seaport as well, and have an international airport that I'll talk about some interesting stats on that in a minute. Two interstate highways come together in our region and serve many of you and your districts as well. And we have a variety of industrial lands that include customers like Columbia Sportswear, America Tire Factory, Freightliner, and a variety of others. We're also one of four major West Coast marine centers, and by that I mean on the container side of the business. As I look at this, and I'm Thursday I'll have a year in at the port, so I can claim ignorance until Thursday. I'll claim it after that, but at least I've got an excuse up until then. We have Puget Sound, Portland, Oakland, San Francisco, and L.A. Long Beach. So we're one of the primary pipelines into the interior of the United States and have a lot of infrastructure that have been utilized over the years to facilitate that. Some of the funding considerations that are of particular interest for the Port of Portland, and these are also true for the other ports in the state of Oregon, I would say. Our market size dictates that we make continual investments in transportation infrastructure to remain competitive. Other ports on the West Coast of all size do this as well. The second point here is that all modes are now deregulated. Just two or three decades ago, each of the individual transportation modes had some sort of heavy regulation when you, in terms of the service that's provided to an individual area. It was true on the aviation side, true on the marine side, and today, actually, it's entirely a competitive environment, and so we have to continually reinvest in our infrastructure and maintain our relationships with our customers to meet those demands. The third point here I'd like to point out is that other ports on the West Coast have a substantial tax base, and by that I mean the major container, international container facilities. Port of Seattle, for example, gets about $59 million annually in property taxes. Port Portland gets $7 million, and Don will tell you how much he gets. It's part of the overall compression, and what that means for us is that a smaller and smaller percentage of our ongoing operation revenues in our budget is actually public money on an ongoing basis. We do obviously get transportation infrastructure grants, and we'll continue to, hopefully in the future, but a lot of our money is directly customer money or rents for our industrial properties, those kinds of things. So that forces us to think and act a little differently than your average port on the West Coast. And as Connect Oregon recognizes, other states have begun to seriously address the investment shortfall in the other modes. California and Washington, for example, have spent a lot of money over the last couple of years and even decade in the case of California in their rail infrastructure. And we believe Connect Oregon will help address that, not just for the Port of Portland, but for ports plural, because we're all relatively rail-dependent and certainly are marine-dependent. A couple of stats, won't get into the numbers too much here. We are, suffice to say, an overachiever on the international side, for example. We're the smallest port in the United States to provide direct air service both to Europe and to Asia, and secured that service just in the last year and a half. Senator Starr was even able to join us on our first trade mission to Europe, and we've seen a lot of benefit just over the last year in gaining both of those services, again, not just for the Portland region, but for the entire state. General aviation, just note that we've got three other airports that we operate at Hillsborough, Troutdale, and Molino, and this pulls some of the air traffic outside of Portland International Airport. Marine terminals. We are, as I mentioned, have direct service from Union Pacific, Burlington Northern railroads, and we also have five major lines of marine service here. Mineral bulks, grain bulks, autos, break bulk, which we don't have so much of anymore, and automobiles. It's worth noting that we're the number one port on the West Coast in terms of automobiles imports. And primarily the reason for that is the great connectivity that we have up and down the West Coast and into the interior of the United States. Creates a great deal of jobs, but the punchline there is we believe the same opportunity that exists for autos also exists for containers for us. Director Warner mentioned the congestion in the Southern California ports that you saw much of earlier this summer and in the fall. We believe some of that traffic could flow over the Port of Portland as well. This is the same map that you saw earlier with the rail lines that come in UP stretching southward, going through Cape Falls ultimately, and down into California, Burlington Northern, which primarily serves the state of Washington, and then also heads east to Chicago and other points in the Midwest. This is a map that we just put together with the 23 ports. Ken will talk to you about some of the Oregon Ports Group activities, but now I'm going to answer the question that you had asked me about what the port has done or is doing to help other small ports in the state. Really, probably the best example of the way that we work cooperatively with other ports is on the operational side. We have a great deal of commerce that goes through our terminals that comes from the upriver ports, Port of Umatilla, Port of Morrow, and even ports in Idaho and Washington, that come through Terminal 6 or come through our grain terminals to international destinations. 21% of our total marine exports come from these upriver ports, so we work hand in glove with Port of Morrow, Port of Umatilla quite frequently, and certainly with the downriver ports as well. Dredging, both on the operational side and in terms of advocating for these dollars on the federal side, we work closely with certainly Port of Newport, Port of Coos Bay, and others in advocating for these dollars. We actually have a dredge that dredges ports up and down the, or has in the past, dredge the channel and the on the maintenance side and the harbors for the other ports on the Columbia River. Also, we've been asked to and have responded to provide a lot of technical assistance, and whether it's engineering, whether it's marketing, or grant writing, some of those things, and have responded to those requests a number of times. A couple of examples here. Department of Homeland Security has created a grant writing process, and we've aided in that. I've actually distributed a letter to you, to Secretary Ridge, where we supported and put together the letter that signed by the delegation, a security request from the Port of Coos Bay along with us and the Port of Umatilla. Ken will get into some of these examples in a minute, but we've done some joint marketing with their ports, including the coastal ports on different projects over time, have done some business and tenant referrals over time. Certainly government relations. The rest of these guys do actual work. We've actually got government relations staff at the Port of Portland, an IR one, but we do as much as we can to provide that assistance both at the state and the federal level with other member ports of the ports group. I won't get into that last. We'll talk about that later. In terms of policy and advocacy, Connect Oregon is certainly something we intend to support going forward, and have been able to participate to some degree over the summer and into the fall in helping provide the department and the governor's office with potential projects both on the marine and the rail side and on the airport side. We participate in the Oregon Ports Group, and in the past, the Oregon Public Ports Association helped start the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund, which is administered by OECDD and funded by you all over time, and represent ports and port issues on a number of task forces, boards, commissions. Ballast Water Task Force is one I've learned about since I've come to the port. That's a lot of fun. Don's going to tell you a little bit more about Pacific Northwest Waterways Association. We've certainly helped with the Freight Advisory Committee, Highway Users League, started a Rail Users League this last year to help in coalescing around rail issues, and have certainly helped with the Columbia River Channel Coalition. You'll hear more from me in the future about what our primary issues are for 2005. Just a couple of notes here. Connect Oregon again. Permitting regulatory issues, pilotage, something we're certainly interested in. That cost has gone up significantly in recent years. And the funding for both economic development and transportation as a whole. So that's kind of the overview. I'm going to turn it over to, I think, Ken now.
Go ahead.
To talk a little bit about the Ports Group and our joint advocacy.
Pat, can you just get that? Can we leave that slide up there?
Yeah.
All right, good. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Ken Armstrong representing the Oregon Ports Group. I really appreciate the opportunity to get up in front of this committee so early in the session. We always look forward to the chance to bring before the legislature a little bit of an education piece on ports, on what we do, how we work together, and the interest that we believe the legislature of the state of Oregon has in what we do. In lots of ways, and this is certainly indicated very clearly with the chair's opening comments, in many ways this is kind of a dream session for us. There's a intense focus on job creation, economic investment, multimodal freight investment, that sort of thing. Of course, we've got the problem of not having enough money to do all the investments that we want to do, but other than that, it's sort of a dream session. There is a lot of focus on the very sort of thing that ports do on a daily basis. Pat has already pretty well covered for you the 23 port districts. If we could get that slide back up there. Is that? Oh, okay.
I'm trying to connect.
Oh. That's good. Well, as you saw on that slide, there are 23 ports that span the Columbia River and north to south on the coast. Not only are we geographically diverse, but in terms of activities, we're diverse. And if you go into ORS Chapter 777, you'll see a lot of statute covering what ports do. Some of it is very obscure. Some of it is off the beaten track, but some of it is very near and dear to the heart of the issue of creating jobs and stimulating economic investment. What I've included for you in this brief handout are a couple of the key duties, functions, powers of port districts. They include improving bays, rivers, wharves, acquiring real property, owning airports, managing airports, owning and managing marina facilities. They can have export trading corporations. They can issue bonds, levy taxes, kind of a whole soup-to-nuts sort of approach that is very unique in the world of local government. Nobody else quite has the power and authority as ports do to be a real tool to establish increased jobs in the state. And that's a job that the ports take very, very seriously, and they work together extensively to that end. On the second page of the handout, it kind of re-summarizes something that Pat already identified for you, and I'm going to let Don give a little bit more detail on these, but I want to hit a couple of quick high points. The Oregon Ports Group is the entity that has been lobbying on behalf of Oregon's public port district since the early 1960s, formerly known as the Oregon Public Ports Association, now the Oregon Ports Group.
Madam Chair, he's referencing a handout. I don't think any of us
have. And I don't think we have it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I set a few over there, Gary, on your desk. Maybe those haven't been distributed. You see a stack of them that look like... That's the one, yes. Do you steal them, Chris? Thank you.
I meant to.
I knew that the governor's office needed scratch paper, but all by testimony, geez. Well, when you see that, it's going to give you an overview, I think, of some of the things that we do. And, of course, more than happy to overburden you with paper, handouts, and anything else that you might need to get a better sense. But, of course, most of you, I've been before in the past talking about ports and what we do. Pacific Northwest Waterways Association, Don is going to talk about, and I think that is an excellent example of port cooperation. That is something that ports do extensively, particularly here during the session. Sometimes it's not as well known. One of the things last session in particular that we were involved with was trying to get some of the bonding money, lottery-backed bonds, for shallow draft dredging projects. In the past, the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund has been specifically targeted at deep draft, new construction projects at the deep draft ports around the state. There's only about five or six of those. What we did last session from a policy standpoint and from, excuse me, the session before was the policy issue. Last session was the actual ways and means investment of having some of those dollars set aside for shallow draft ports that need to have projects dredged that provide access to federally authorized and funded channels. That's something that has not been the case in the past, and the Port of Portland has played a key role, as well as Mr. Egan, of course, when he was in the governor's office, in getting $3.5 million invested in that program so that our ports can get some of those projects dredged that otherwise might not be able to occur. So very important cooperation and help between all of the ports, and it's very important to note that with the diversity of the activities among ports, some of our folks in the association don't deal at all with transportation, really, except maybe from the standpoint of public marinas. Yet they still play the same role within the association to help lobby on behalf of those ports that do need to have the dredging, that do need to get the rail spurs, that do need to get the wharf lines improved, to stand together as an industry to say, yes, this is important for the entire state, and that's something that they want to help support together. So with that, I want to step back and let Mr. Mann, manager of Port of Newport, cover some of these things in a little bit more detail from a local perspective. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. Madam Chair and other members of the committee, again, my name is Don Mann. I'm the general manager of the Port of Newport, and I'm starting my 10th year at the Port of Newport, and I'm proud to say that I've spent 30 years with ports in Oregon and economic development and business development, and it's given me a broad view of how ports can cooperate and work together. It doesn't matter if it's a small port or a large port. There's opportunity for all the ports to work together. One of the key ingredients, I think, for cooperation are the port organizations that we've formed over the years. PNWA, for an example, I think is 70 years old. PNWA, the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association, bring the ports together looking at federal issues that are key to all the ports and their success, especially when it comes to dredging. And it's ports not only in Oregon, but in Washington and Idaho and beyond. And how this organization affects what goes on within the federal legislation and being successful And it's been a battle over the last 15 or 20 years to keep money in the federal budget for our dredging needs, especially the small ports on the coast. And we found lots of cooperation with the key ports in Oregon, such as the Port of Portland, in helping lead that mission with the small ports at the same table.
Don, may I interrupt you and just ask you, because I truly, this is a serious question that I honestly don't know the answer. Why are the ports constantly having to go begging to the federal government? Why do your funds keep getting cut at that level?
There's, if you ask the federal government that question, I guess the answer would be there's a lot of reasons. Each port, when the ports were organized and became a port district, the dredging needs were based on the industry at the time, and most of that on the Oregon coast. And the reason the jetties were developed was based on the wood products industry. There was a lot of wood products going up and down every port. They made the channels, they maintained the channels every year to keep that economic engine going within those communities. They developed large-scale, large projects of jetty infrastructure, and that continued for a long time. Now, as the industry has changed, the wood products has declined in the exports on the coast. There used to be a mill or more in every community along the coast. Now there are none, and with the exception of some small stud mills, there's one small stud mill in Toledo. But it's based on a cost benefit, and when that benefit starts to dwindle, the federal government does not feel it necessary to continue to support those projects as long as they don't have that benefit in their favor. So anytime there's a new a repair or maintenance of a project that takes a lot of money, that comes into play. And a good example is the deepening of the Columbia River. There was that project, and I've been there the whole time. It's almost 20 years now that project started, and it's taken that long to get that project going, looking mainly at the environment and the cost benefit. So it's all based on what benefit it brings to the region and to the communities in order for the government to continue to invest. The small ports on the coast are the number one ports, or the first ports, to feel that decline because they no longer have that economy that they had when they were moving a lot of wood products. So it's one of those things that we are looking to diversify, bringing in new industry for imports and exports, and we are very pleased to have the opportunity to work with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department on these small navigation improvement programs, as Ken mentioned, the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund, which brings in some state assistance with some local match money to benefit some small projects within those communities. So that's
excuse me, Don, but so Grand Oregon or seafood processing or added value products would all be beneficial to you at the federal level as well as far as receiving money.
Senator Berger, that's correct. The other enemy, and I know I'm going to repeat some of the things you've already heard, and I'll just kind of bounce through that because I know that you still have work to do this afternoon. The Marine Navigation Improvement Fund, another program that benefits all the ports in their cooperation with large and small ports, is the Port Planning and Marketing Fund, which is a part of economic development, and also the Port Revolving Loan Fund. The Port Planning and Marketing Fund has allowed us to enter into contracts with other ports. Port of Newport and Port of Portland formed a partnership in working on projects with the Corps of Engineers for economic benefit projects, looking at recreation and commercial benefits for the benefit of dredging. And that has proven to be a good tool for us when we go to the federal legislation. The ports reporting system is another project of economic development, and it's done each year or every other year with cooperation with the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, which is a cooperative organization representing most of coastal Oregon, but the ports reporting system also includes the Columbia River ports as well, and this helps us develop information we need when we go back to the federal legislation each year to help qualify for the federal dollars that we continue to ask for dredging. Port projects are very important to us, and as I mentioned, coastal dredging, cooperative marketing, recreation, tourism, commercial fishing, and the getting back to what one of the comments that Pat was talking about on tax base, the Port of Newport's tax base is about $65,000 a year, 0.069 cents per thousand, and most of our budget is done through service fees and lease fees. That's how we survive, as well as with recreation, recreational marina, as Ken mentioned, and RV parks. So it's the cooperative effort that the ports within each county, for instance, the Port of Newport, we have cooperative projects with ports in our county, the Port of Alcee, the Port of Toledo, Port of Newport, and also the City of Depot Bay, and other ports that have more than one port in their district, like Curry County. They have cooperative efforts working together. And as each of these ports work together, it goes back again to these organizations that we all belong to, and it gets back to the larger ports that are there supporting those organizations that continue to keep the organizations running, because they do support a large portion of the structure of those organizations, not only because they can. The fact is that they are leaders, and we look at the Port of Portland, even at the Port of Newport or any of the small ports, they're not only an economic engine, they're the engine for the state of Oregon, and those efforts stretch beyond, of course, our state and our region. They go to the hinterlands of Idaho and Montana and beyond as we bring wheat from the hinterlands into the Columbia Valley. The federal dredging funds, the minimum dredge fleet, we could talk about that all day. That's a battle that we've been fighting for many years, as well as the Columbia River deepening, which benefits all of Oregon, and will reach into the hinterland as well, those benefits. We also support the advocacy from the Port of Portland, and even the Port of Coos Bay, or some of the leaders in the state for ports. And all these issues, in contrast, they directly benefit the coastal fishing ports as well, like Newport, Coos Bay, Siuslaw, Brookings, and Garibaldi, which are all major fishing ports within their communities. So with that, I mean, there's a lot of things that we could talk about today, and I hope I can maybe answer some questions. But I guess in closing, what I would say is that Senate Bill 71, Connect Oregon, is very important and is needed for Oregon ports to survive economically. Thank you.
Okay. We'll be open for questions. Any questions? Okay. I think one of the things that I'd like to just ask you, if you had your wishes, and it just would become true, king for a day, in other words, what do you feel that would be the greatest help or to the ports, the small ports along the coastal areas? I've watched them struggle so long, and yet I'm not sure I really know exactly what it's going to take for us to really make them viable. Now, touching on the wood products problem and the decline of that, and perhaps the emerging of a different kind of product catches my attention. But what other things could you comment on?
Summary, I guess the key thing that would help and take a lot of burden off of the ports along the coast would be the federal government loosening the strings on the Harbor Maintenance Tax Fund, which is a fund that is used to collecting tax on imports. Is that right? Make sure I get this right. But it's held in trust, and there's over $500 million a year collected nationally to go into it. It's $500 million plus. And the dredging needs for the nation are probably a little over that $600 million range. That money's held in trust, and I don't know all the details of it, but that is the key. That money is paid on imports to pay for maintenance dredging, harbor maintenance dredging for nation's ports. And we're going to be working on that this year. Again, we have not hit this head on, but if we can get the federal government to loosen up and provide funds from that harbor maintenance tax fund, we would be able to have enough money in the civil works core budget to do the dredging for the small ports, not only in Oregon, but in all small ports, East Coast, West Coast, and the Gulf.
Madam Chair, can I add just one or two quick things to that? Ken Armstrong, there really isn't a silver bullet for the smaller ports because so much of it depends on what region of the state in which they're located and what sort of activities they're involved in. Some of the things that help are, you know, some of the restrictions over fish harvest. You're going to find that on the coast. Goal 9 issues locally, making sure that there's an adequate supply of industrial and commercial land. And investment in infrastructure programs, the transportation system, so many different pieces of it make such a dramatic difference to both the smaller and the larger ports that it's tough to put your finger on just one thing. But I appreciate the question.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Senator Starr is recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One pretty simple question I'm going to test you, Ken, on. You mentioned there's 23 ports, and on the map that Pat had on his slide, we have had a hard copy of it. I only counted 22. Can you tell me which one is inland or which one is not on the coast or on the river?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, I'm guessing that the port of Coquille River is not on that map.
You guessed right.
Okay.
Good. All right. That answers that simple question.
It is a port district. That's correct.
Fantastic. Yeah.
All right.
Well, there's also an inland port, the port of Malheur, which I believe has been voted into existence, but they didn't vote for the tax increment. So it's a question of whether it actually exists or not. But there is a sort of a 23 and a half.
All right, then a follow-up. And one that caught my eye, Ken, again in your testimony. It really wasn't. It's in your written handout. Under the ports cooperation and under other, you mentioned one the top bullet point. There, offshore oil platform construction projects.
Mm-hmm.
Offshore oil platforms.
Thank you. I was running a little short on time, Senator, and so I chose not to go into much detail on that. But the short story on that, Madam Chair, Senator Starr, is that was a very interesting marketing project done in the late 80s, early 90s. The original Oregon Ports Group was a consortium of five ports, Coos Bay, Newport, Astoria, St. Helens, and Portland, that entered into a consortium partially funded from the Port Planning and Marketing Grant Program that Mr. Mann mentioned, partially funded by the other ports, including the Port of Portland, to go after construction projects for pieces of offshore oil platform rigs. There were some trade shows down in Houston, Texas. They'd go and try and market property, that sort of thing.
So this is Madam Chair, this is an example of cooperation in the past.
This is correct.
So it's not an ongoing.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
If I can, Madam Chair?
Yes,
I just had another quick thought following up on Mr. Mann's comment on the Harbor Maintenance Dredge Fund, and it's a federal issue. There's lots of times when the legislature will pass a memorial asking Congress to do certain things, whether or not Congress ever reads those or does anything because we ask. This might be an opportunity for this committee or our, you know, cooperation with the House to draft one of those, and we can ensure that Ken and Mr. Mann and Mr. Egan would help us draft that perhaps. Let's just kind of throw that out there as an option.
Thank
Good
you very
idea.
Much.
Good idea. No, I like that. Senator Brzezinski.
No.
No questions?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for being here today. All right. We have another agenda that has already been posted for our next meeting. I just want to thank everyone for being here. Two former chairs, so I have to really watch my P's and Q's. And delighted to have Senator Wilson as my co-chair, vice chair, and I want us to work closely together, and so we'll, even though you're new here, you won't be new long. It'll be very, very, very good. So with that, if there's nothing else to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.
Could you... Thank you.